This is Indie Book Publishing. Indie Book Publishing is a show about new books and the authors who wrote them. It's an opportunity for prospective readers to hear directly from the writers, to hear what inspired them to write and publish, and to hear all the inside details about their books. And now, Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, Heaven or Hell, and the author is Ronnie Tizon. And Ronnie joins us now on Indie Book Publishing, this interview brought to you by Balboa Press. Hello, Ronnie.
Hi, Steve.
This is a very dramatic novel. It has some incredible plot lines, especially the title reflects it, and also some other interesting situations, challenges like alcoholism, which obviously affects a lot of people today, and death affects all of us, and life after life. And let me read what you've written. Where is heaven and what happens when we die? Will we see our loved ones again? Hot topics in the world today and of interest to most people. And then in general, Heaven or Hell is a story of a family recovering from a series of tragedies that includes loss, abandonment, alcoholism, and obsession. But in the end, with a little otherworldly help, the entire family is transformed. And in that, fiction are many pieces of truth. Well, that's often the way, isn't it? We call it fiction, but it often is reality.
Yes, I agree with you. And you can't, when you sit down to write a book, sometimes you get to the end and you realize, wow, there's a lot of pieces of me in that work. So yes, absolutely.
Well, tell us a little bit about yourself, Ronnie, and why you decided to write this book.
Well, I learned to really love reading as an adult. A lot of people say they started reading when they were children and they loved it. Didn't come to me until I was an adult. And in that, I always thought, wow, I think I can write because my family is very, very creative. My mom's an artist. My brother's an artist. We have a lot of creativity. My sister as well. And so I sat down. It became a dream. I want to write a book. I sat down to write a book, and then there you have a blank page. And it's not as easy as you think it is. I mean, I think many people often say, I want to write a book. So then I just started taking courses, and over a decade I took many of them. And I started this novel and got so busy with my career that I couldn't get back to it. I eventually got back to it when I was diagnosed with cancer and I had some downtime to work on it. So what happened from there, and ironically, because I started the book before the cancer, there is a character that has cancer in it, and the topic, Heaven or Hell, I was always obsessed with life after death, and, you know, I started reading those books back when I was a teenager, Life After Life by Raymond Moody. So everything that I've always been interested in falls into this book, and I guess I could say when I was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer, I made this list. I didn't want to call it a bucket list. And the first thing on it was I wanted to finish my novel. And so I did. I finished it, had it edited, and spent quite a bit of time rewriting it and making sure it was proofread before I put the final product out. So that's how the book came to fruition.
Tell us about Joe. He seems to be an upstanding member of society. But he has a lot of problems, but then he goes on an experience that he'll never forget.
Yeah, Joe is the anti-hero. He's the person that you actually love, and you don't know why you love him. He's got a lot of charisma. He's the patriarch of the family. About 20 years ago, his wife falls ill with pancreatic cancer, and that's a very, almost an impossible cancer to beat. And then during that same time period, she's going through her chemo, and during that same time period, his young daughter dies in a wreck, and he just loses it, and he can't cope, and he disappears, and he's gone for about 20 years before he reenters his family's life, and that's where the book starts. So he disappears in an alcoholic haze, I guess you could call it, and goes through his own experience through hell. It's all documented in the book. And he's somebody. Let me just tell you this. My editor, he's my favorite character, And my editor also. A lot of people can relate to Joe for whatever reason. He's just, he's flawed, but you love him.
So you take us to hell.
Yeah, Joe does.
Right? I mean, you have your own view of it, and is it in detail?
Yeah, Joe experiences his own trip through hell, and it's basically what sobered him up. You know, the guy tried to sober up for years, and until he's about to die, and literally, you know, you hear a lot about near-death experiences and how people see the light and have a warm, fuzzy feeling. Well, there are some out there that don't quite have that experience, and they're not documented as readily as the happy ones, I should say. But Joe has the negative experience, and his journal is in this book. It used to be my favorite part because I love Stephen King books, and it's got a little paranormal twist to it. But he documents his own experience through hell that actually sobers him up. And it stems from my belief that you create your own hell and you can create your own heaven. And, you know, I believe there's a lot of people that may disagree with this, and it is controversial, that any of us can enter into heaven and any of us can be forgiven and be redeemed. And that's the journey that you'll see in this book.
But the journey is about choice.
Yeah, that's a good, yes, it is. Because I learned this from here, because I experienced a lot of personal loss when I was writing this book. During stage four treatment, and, you know, my career fell apart, my relationship, everything fell apart. And the one thing that I learned, and I realized that I wrote about this for Joe, or maybe I relearned this, Steve, is that you cannot control other people's actions, but you can control your own reaction. And Joe learns that in the end, and it's you know, not only is he transformed, but so are the other three main characters in the book. So that's a hard thing to relearn when you should already know that. You know, you can choose to spiral downward, or you can choose to spiral upward. And, you know, I didn't touch the book for a year after I wrote it. I had an agent. I tried to get it out there, and we didn't even get a decline. So when I lost the agent and published it through Balboa, I had to reread it again. And I hesitantly did, and then I was like, wow, I would buy this. I love to write books or read books that are page turners. And I liked that transformation. And when I read it, that's what I was like, wow, this is the same thing I learned again in my journey, that you cannot control other people's actions, but you can control your own reactions and how you handle it.
One of your reviewers talks about you. You're a gifted storyteller who brings to life a hardened alcoholic with the same grace and honesty she employs in writing about an angel. Heaven or hell is a page-turner. I didn't want it to end. So that's what this is about. And so let's next talk about Teresa.
Teresa is obsessed with cleaning. And she's also somebody that I've had a couple people reach out to me and can relate to. You know, I think sometimes you don't want to look at things in your own life and you do other things to keep yourself distracted. And she just truly isn't living her life. And she is a character that I had a real hard time writing from her point of view. Now, the point of view will shift in this book through these characters that will advance the story. And when I first started writing the book, my editor, who's also become a good friend of mine, said, I don't think you should go this route, Ronnie. You need one point of view, or, you know, you need to do omnis. And she went on and on. I said, no, this is what's in my head. I've got to do this. And when I got to the end, she said, you were right. This works. So I had the most difficult time writing from Teresa's point of view. She's just very structured. These people, obviously these characters became people to me. When I was done with the book, I miss them. It's kind of like a good read. When you have a good read and you finish reading it, you miss the characters. But Teresa turns into somebody that I really, really like. And so she's raising a son on her own. She's in Los Angeles, and Joe is her father. and he reaches back out to her to bring her back into his life after 20 years, and she really has a struggle with that, and there's some conflict as to whether or not she ever wants to see him because he walked away and made her deal with her mom's funeral and everything on her own when she was 19. So she's learned to deal with that by just focusing on her little store that she owns and her son and just not really living her life.
Now tell us about Angel. She wonders where she's at. Is she in heaven or hell?
She, for some reason, is attracted to Teresa, and she's not of this earth. And that's a mystery that I don't want to give out, but she cannot figure it out. She doesn't know who she is. She thought she was going to be born to her when Teresa had her son, and she has no idea why she keeps following this woman around. And she's just drawn to her. And, you know, she was designed from, Steve, I don't know if you've ever had this happen to you, but almost my whole adult life, there's noises in the house that you can dismiss. You can say, oh, it's the house settling or, you know, but there's certain things that happen if you pay attention, I believe, that are really not the house settling. I mean, one time I had the blind slip up in my bathroom. I'm like, who did that? There was no one in there. Angel was kind of designed from that. She is a spirit, a ghost, whatever she is. She's not of this earth, and she cannot figure out why she's tied to Teresa. And she's for years, she's just followed this woman around, and, you know, when she's tired, she goes up and lives in the clouds, which, you know, I may have written that because when I was going through chemo, I wanted to just live in the clouds, but she's a really neat little character, and she goes through her own transformation in this book as well.
Another reviewer said, excellent handling of a dysfunctional family actually coming full circle. The topic of life after death puts an intriguing spin on this story, captivating. Well, this is not the end of your writing. You're going to write more.
Absolutely.
Have anything else in the works?
I do. When I went through my own personal struggles and during the writing of this book, I journaled everything. And I had my own transformation a couple years ago when I was hit with the cancer. And I'm currently putting that into a memoir that's called Run. And it's in the works. It's probably about 6 months down the line that it'll be completed. And it's a very cathartic process writing that. It was difficult to go back and read the journals and work on it because I'm putting them into a read that makes sense. You know, I had this, Steve, I had a year of saying yes to everything because I just went through so much, and that was a crazy year. And, you know, I have this list that I continue to update, and there are many things in my life that have changed, that I've been able to do and conquer and set forth a mantra, put one foot in front of the other, and focus on the end result, which was the cure, and I was able to beat that cancer. Even got hit with some more later on that was non-related, that's gone. So today I have no cancer, and I just live in a great life, and I want to share that. And I think it's a good journey, and I've had many people tell me when they're going through a thing or two in their life that it's inspiring and that they feel like they can get through it based on everything I went through. So that's the next book, and I'm thinking at least 6 months to be out and available, and on my website as well, which is just my name, www.ronnietezon.com.
Tezon is spelled T-E-S-O-N for everyone. Also, Ronnie, does the family in this get transformed?
Yes. Yes, the family does. In the end, that's where they come full circle. It's great to see people get healed and come out of things in the end with some valuable insight and just living a life, as I would say for myself, better than I ever imagined. And that's basically what happens to them.
Just a closing statement. Heaven or Hell is a story about tragedy, loss, and a triumphant, life-changing resurrection when the lives of Joe, Teresa, and Angel collide in this world and beyond. Ronnie, tell us how to get your book.
Well, it's available on Amazon. It's on the website of Amazon, website Barnes & Noble. It's also available through any ebook you search by title, Heaven or Hell, and my first name is R-O-N-I, last name Tezon, T-E-S-O-N. I certainly would love to hear any feedback on it. Anybody that has any feedback, good, bad, or indifferent, I love to hear that. It's how you grow, you know?
That's for sure, and a remarkable story of your own life, and congratulations to be in a good situation now, and congratulations on your book.
Thank you, Steve.
We've been listening to Ronnie Tezon. She is the author of her book, Heaven or Hell. Thank you for being with us on Indie Book Publishing. And this interview has been brought to everyone by Balboa Press.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages. Get ready to live La Bella Vita with Dawn Catherine on Toginet.com. Live La Bella Vita. If you're wanting to know all the beauty tricks of the trade and the latest fashion trends before everyone else, this is your show. If you admire celebrities' beauty and their fashion sense, this is your show. Do you love wine and want to know more about the process it takes to make wine from the vine to the bottle? This is your show. Live La Bella Vita. For more on the show and your host, check out her website, LaBellaVitaCosmetico.com. This is the kind of show you can sink your teeth into. If you enjoy traveling and food and family, all with an Italian flair, then you can live La Bella Vita with your host, Dawn Catherine. Wednesday nights at midnight, 11 p.m. Central, on TogiNet.com. Mark Lipinski is coming to TogiNet. It's Creative Mojo with Mark Lipinski, a live two-hour show Wednesday afternoon starting at 3, 2 Central on TogiNet.com. Creative Mojo. It's fun, entertaining, informative, inspirational, and illuminating. Lipinski has worked on such shows as Oprah, The View, The Joan Rivers Show, and Ricky Lake. He's busy, but he's got the drive to share with Creative Mojo, dedicated to the modern crafter and crafting lifestyle. Dive into the info and enjoy everything from celebs to entertainment news to recipes, quilting and needlework, knitting, painting, woodworking, Christmas crafts, and so much more. This show boldly encourages you to discover and harness your own creative spirit by living creatively every day. For more on Mark and the show, check out marklipinski.com. Don't miss the fun. It's Creative Mojo with Mark Lipinski, Wednesday afternoon starting at 3, 2 Central on toginet.com. Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, Live Life with God, and the author is Sarah Brazel. And Sarah joins us now on Indie Book Publishing, this interview brought to you by Crossbooks. Hello, Sarah.
Hello.
Good to have you with us. This book is very unique. You're going to explain the background in a moment about why you wrote the book, the setting of it, and how it all came about. But let me read a couple of things you've written. So in general, everyone understands what we're going to talk about. You say the three main characters in the book set up a life review model that shows how God reached out to bless, lead, and teach with life experiences. And you say, I hope that the reader will use the model on their own lives and that they will benefit from it. So, interesting approach. There's really more than just a story. It's a kind of a reflective guidebook, or I'm probably not saying it right. How would you describe it?
Well, it's not, about 45% of the book is fiction. But the book is not about me, and it's not about the two characters. It's trying to let a person know, the reader, when they read it, to put their, go back through their life.
Okay.
And see their experiences from an adult viewpoint. You know, like when you were little, a pond might have seemed just huge. Well, there are a lot of things in life that when you look back on them, they're rather insignificant.
Right. They look much different. Right. Extremely different.
But the thing is, I have lived my life this way, even though I've made a lot of, you know, bad decisions, as everybody does. You've got to be intentional about having a relationship with God. I mean, you could go to church and what we call saved, but he's not going to talk to you and guide you unless you intentionally seek after him. And I think the book, I mean, I think a non-Christian could read it and they would realize that the Bible is really relevant. And it's in story form, but, you know, God in 2 Samuel used fiction. And that's, to me, the book tells a lot of God's truth, but in regular language.
Okay, the book, we're talking about angels, we're talking about prison inmates. Why did you take this approach?
Well, I don't know why I used the angels, because I've never had any experience with angels. I just wanted them to have a conversation with somebody. I don't know why I started with that. Actually, Steve, writing would definitely be my weakest area. And, I mean, I'm more of a math person. I taught GED in prison. I was a diagnostician in public schools. But I had when I went over there to do this really a substitute job and it just this therapy for myself, there weren't any reading materials. And like I say, I can't even spell. Writing is the last thing that is my weakest. The whole thing was just so God-motivated. And I found this book, Frankenstein. Have you ever read that story? It's a classic, 100-something years old.
What is the title again?
Frankenstein.
Oh, yes. Yes. Yeah.
Well, that, you know, the language of it and everything, I knew they would like the story. They would be interested in that. But then I got all worked up about the creator of that, you know, even though it was totally fiction and they understood that. This man was, his creator just went off and left him. I mean, it was like a baby waking up. And then besides everything else, he had to teach himself to walk. You know, I don't know where he even got clothes. His creator just totally deserted him. But I changed the story around and took a bunch of things out of it to make it, you know, the parts that I knew they wouldn't be interested in. And I turned the monster around to be sympathetic. And here they thought he had a whole lot more problems than I had, yet he was able, you know, to, they related to him. And they realized that all he was looking for was acceptance. And they were so moved, and I was so, you know, I just couldn't believe how just that story, they went right where I wanted them to go. And then that very day, one of them said, "Does God ever talk to you?" And I thought, you know, I can write something and witness to these people. And then it just started. And, you know, I wanted to be the mother of one of them because I knew I wanted to go through this, look back at your life and realize, you know, how God has intervened. And I'm doing all this talking here.
That's fine. That's fine. It's very interesting. So, you base your characters on these prisoners that you dealt with.
Well, no, I didn't. I was going to, and then I talked to the warden about how I would interview, you know, the two inmates. And, you know, one of them was in my class, and they all want to talk to you. Well, one of them, another man, since I was going to be the mother of one of them was going to be, you know, educated and all that. And there was an offender there, a young fella. It had been an Army Ranger, and then I thought, well, he will be great, you know, to be one of the characters. Well, later on, when it got time to do the interviews on the students, the warden was upset that I had said something about a riot because I had to get somebody hurt. You know, I wanted him to be in the hospital and, you know, in a life-threatening situation. Mm-hmm. And one of them was going to live and one was going to die.
So there's a prison riot.
So they had to get hurt at prison. Well, a friend of mine told me, well, just say they had a riot. Well, then later the warden had a problem with that, and he didn't tell me to my face. He just, you know, I could have changed it to an accident. You know, they could have had a car wreck or something. But anyway, that just kind of, I hate to say, pissed me off. We better take that out. But anyway, I thought, I'm not going to do this job anymore. Of course, anyway, but the book kept on going. So when I decided, that was just the last, when I found out he said that, I just left that day and told him I wasn't going to substitute and help him anymore. So then I had a brother-in-law that had a very colorful life. And I decided he would be a great character. I mean, he had actually been in jail, and he had also had a Christian background. His father had been, and I mean, this man had been through it and had a very interesting life. So he was going to be a character. And then I was going to still use my youngest daughter because she's unusual. Very dynamic, very successful, has three darling children, can do anything, but she has always had this anger problem. Well, I couldn't think of a crime for her. And I say that it's fiction, but actually her husband, see, I had to keep her as a man because, you know, I just started out that way and I wanted to keep on that way. So I made her husband, her wife, and anyway, while I'm trying to come up with a crime, I don't want her to be a drug addict and I don't want her to be a thief. Well, actually, her husband, you're going to have to take this out. It's so unreal. I'm trying to come up with a crime for her, and, you know, I'm kind of particular since she's my child. I wanted to be kind of an accident. And her husband actually has an emotional affair and ruins his career in the military. I mean, this guy graduated 7th in his class from the United States Air Force Academy. He's on special assignment at the Pentagon. I mean, this young man is going places. And I think I can use this. And even though our family went through a lot of trauma, it all worked out beautifully. But I didn't let her have the three little children because I just couldn't deal with, you know, them being hurt.
Well, let's kind of get into some other aspects. These two angels appear to these prisoners, and what is the reason for that?
I wanted somebody to have a conversation and for them to tell their life story. And see, they're told right there from the get-go, that's how the book opens. They're in the hospital room. And the angels are there, and they're just like regular people, you know, just like in the Old Testament. I mean, angels are all through the Bible. I just have never had any contact with one. You know, the Holy Spirit and Jesus and God, the bigger enough from, you know, have always handled everything I need done. But I wanted them to be a conversation of telling about their life, you see. So the reason they're having the conversation is they're told at the end of the, you know, you're going to tell us about your life, and then one of you's going to die, and then one of you's going to be healed and go back to prison. And then, I mean, it is a very exciting story.
And Daniel's mother, one of the prisoners, is a very important role in this.
Well, he doesn't have any more important role than the other man.
But I mean the mom, Daniel's mother.
Well, Daniel's mother is me.
Right.
And then while I'm dealing with his death, I relive my life, you know. I just start going back over everything.
So these repressed memories of your childhood.
Yeah, these repressed memories of my childhood. They look altogether different as an adult,
right.
In which everybody has things like this.
So what are you trying to teach everyone through this, Sarah?
I'm trying to get them to, and several, a good many people have read this book, and I think I accomplished that because I think they, like, for instance, when I was, my daddy was crazy about me, but when I went to the University of Texas, I was just so overwhelmed with a low self-esteem that I flunked out of school. And he, you know, he hated that happening to me, but I took that, I held on to that for 50 years, and all he wanted to do was, you know, help me make better choices. He didn't reject me, and he was a wonderful father. And, you know, everybody had a wonderful father. But I think in anybody's life, when they go back and look at what their experience is, they can see God has been trying to intervene, you know, always. I think he does that.
But we have to ask the right questions?
Well, you know, if you have choices, you know, to me, you're being constantly by Satan. And if you don't recognize God's voice, but there's enough of the Bible in the book, Steve, where I think if somebody hadn't read it, it would make them want to read it.
Oh, great.
And then, you know, the Screwtape Letters by C.S. Lewis is, you know, a classic. And
mm-hmm.
I reversed that theme at the end of it where Daniel is actually, he was a school teacher in real life, and he's actually teaching these angels that are coming to earth to help people. And then, you know, the angels are going to kind of know, they're going to, you know, they can't just, like I say, did you ever read Screwtape Letters?
Sure.
You did?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's kind of the reverse of that. On the angels will kind of see. And then Daniel is, I mean, I'm a very humorous person, and it's a serious book, but I did try to put some of my humor in it every place I could. And Daniel just feels like he can't do it because he's never been anything but a school teacher. And he can't talk about, you know, other problems. And, you know, it's just, the whole thing is kind of conversational. But then if people have made a mistake, it's I use kind of a pattern that Beth Moore used in why godly people do ungodly things. Because my son-in-law had been such a deep Christian, I couldn't believe that he got off track. But then again, it kind of explains how that happens. And if you get off track, I put it kind of like she did, as a, you know, a circle around a person. And if that circle gets broken, then, you know, how you can, I mean, I guess everybody believes in the devil, but I don't think they realize that that force is working so strongly against them.
Right. Well, you have a, sounds like a very unique way to get this point across. As you say, when the answers are from God, one can always find hope in a cloud of despair. And it's really easy to allow ourselves to get in that kind of a depressive, mental, heart-filled anguish. But there is hope. Well, Sarah, we kind of have to wrap up here. How do we get your book, Live Life with God?
Well, it's on, the company is going to, you can get it on Amazon or you can get it from Crossbook, but they right now are marketing the book and they will be selling it. But now on Amazon.com or Barnes & Noble, now those companies print their own books, so the ones they are printing aren't quite as nice as Crossbook. but you know, it'll be in a lot of catalogs, and then they will probably put the book in their stores. You know, they own what are those stores? Lifeway.
Right, Lifeway. I think you're right. Yeah, Lifeway.
Yeah,
right.
It's a Baptist.
Yeah, a Christian bookstore.
You know,
right.
And I'm not a Baptist, but I believe a lot of the way the Baptists believe.
Okay. Well, very good, Sarah. Well, thank you so much for being with us to talk about your book. She's Sarah Brazel, Live Life with God. Thanks for being with us on Indie Book Publishing.
Okay.
And this interview has been brought to everyone by Crossbooks.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages. Get ready to laugh along with This Little Parent Stayed Home with Ali Loprete. Friday evenings at 6, 5 Central on TogiNet.com. This is a truly realistic, no-nonsense, tell-it-like-it-is method that will have you laughing and crying, surviving while struggling, and hammering away at the hardships as you travel through the greatest journey of your life. Get empowered by joining thousands of other parents who have also decided to take a leap of faith into a double career with longer hours and half the pay simply because of the love they have for their children. Together, we are rebuilding a new economy that will support us rather than enslave us. Never again will we have to choose between raising our children and earning to provide for them. It won't be easy, but it will be worth it. For more on Allie and her success, check out her website, OurMilkMoney.com. So come get empowered with This Little Parent Stayed Home with Allie Loprete, Friday afternoons at 6, 5 Central on TogiNet.com.
People think I've made it. I'm popular. I seem happy all the time. I have great clothes and I'm involved in everything. But I have questions, doubts, and fears, just like every other teenager. That's why I'm glad for Teen Talk Radio, where it's all about choices.
Join us for Teen Talk Radio with Nicole Odell, Thursday nights at 10, 9 Central on TogiNet.com.
The choices we have to make that can alter the course of our lives. Life is too much pressure if we try to go it alone. I tune in to Teen Talk Radio with Nicole Odell every week to get reminded that I'm not alone. Nicole Odell is an expert on what happens in the lives of teenagers. Join her as she deals with topics like peer pressure, purity, drugs, alcohol, and many other things that might come up along the way. She writes books and speaks to people all over the place, but she says her favorite moments are when she can pull up a chair and chat with teens about what's important to us.
For more information on Nicole and her books, go to NicoleOdell.com. Then join us for Teen Talk Radio with Nicole Odell, Thursday nights at 10, 9 Central on TogiNet.com.
Teen Talk Radio, where it's all about choices.
Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, Finding Artemisia, A Journey into Ancient Women's Business. And the author, Denise Greenaway, and Denise joins us now on Indie Book Publishing, this interview brought to you by Balboa Press. Hello, Denise.
Hello, Steve.
Great to have you with us all the way from Australia. Thank you.
Thank you.
Let me read a couple things you've written about your book. You say, Finding Artemisia is a true journey into the female mind and spirit and very powerful connection we've lost over time as modern women to each other and our true selves. It's a journey into profound healing and provides a unique and inspirational look into the world of anorexia, self-image, and psychology against the backdrop of the Australian outback and its tribal women. So you're really pitting modern society's view of women with the media and everything in its glory of marketing women a certain way, and then all of a sudden you're forcing us to go into the desert and meet with women who live there and don't know anything about this.
That's exactly right, because that's exactly what happened to me. And that's what inspired me to write about this. I am still a psychologist, and I had been practicing and dealing a lot with girls with body image disorders and women with bulimia and anorexia and anxiety. And then I was invited to attend a big ceremony in the middle of Australia with Aboriginal people, and I got to sit with Aboriginal women. And by sit, I mean we had no language in common. And so all we could really do together was sit paint each other's bodies and dance. Can you imagine? And in that, I realized after about 4 days that I was in an image-free zone.
Hmm.
I was looking at women who were not manufactured, who had not seen a mirror, who had not watched television, who'd never picked up a magazine, and I watched how they were in their bodies, and I watched how they looked at me.
Hmm.
And there was no feeling of competition. There was no feeling of being assessed as women can do with each other.
Right.
You know, it was just this feeling of absolute belonging. And with no judgment, it was amazing. It was so liberating.
So bottom line, you were all females, all feminine, and no matter what you looked like or what you were wearing, it didn't matter.
That is exactly right. What we wore, there was when we had paint-ups, we were bare-breasted. We only had a something around the bottom. The rest of the time, because it's cold in the desert, we just wore whatever was needed to keep warm. There were women there who had stubble on their chin. There were women who you would say were classically beautiful by the magazine definition. And there was no self-consciousness. There was no, you know, when the women put stuff on their skin, it's to protect their skin from the sun. And when they do stuff with their hair, it's the same. But there was no consciousness. There was no self-consciousness. There was no idea of being separate or being stuck in time as a photograph. And that was so liberating. And then the way we connected after that, once I got to realize what I was sitting in this beautiful pond of image with no image, I then could connect with the women spiritually. And then I could see how they interacted with each other just by a glance, just by a small word, but mainly by dance, by painting, by drawing, and quite a lot of the time in silence. It was a very beautiful experience.
You call this inspirational fiction, and we have this character, Dr. Diana Verdi, who I guess is kind of you, right?
Well, she's kind of an alter ego of me. She has a lot of my experiences, but I gave her a bit of distance to myself because I wanted to write it in fiction because I didn't want to totally expose myself.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, she is. She has the same beliefs as me, and she has the same experiences that I did in the desert, and she has the same kind of fears, really. You know, not feeling out of her depth when she was there without her world and what she knew and the way she was challenged by those women who had never heard of psychology and couldn't care less.
Right. So she goes there with, as you put it, some very weighty baggage, a recent loss of her mother, a fraught relationship with her father, and a floundering marriage. But she's on a mission of sorts.
Yes, she is, but she doesn't know it. You know how many times we find ourselves in situations and we don't realize we're actually on a mission and we just think it's a series of circumstances? Well, from the very go-get, when she arrives in Alice Springs, everything changes. Her first night there, she has a very deep spiritual experience, which awakens her to the possibility of being transported to this Aboriginal community. Had she not had that experience, she probably wouldn't have accepted the invitation.
Now you thrust Artemisia into this story, this 14-year-old patient of hers, of Dr. Verdi, mm-hmm. and she's critically ill with anorexia. So what is going on here? How is all this working together?
Well, how it works is that the girl was critically ill and was just getting well under Dr. Diana's treatment for 6 months. And then the girl's mother literally kidnaps her because the mother no longer has custody of the child from their very difficult relationship the grandmother has. And the mother comes and takes the child in the middle of the night. And Diana is completely distraught by that because she's not even really stable physically at this point. And so what happens when Diana's in the desert not knowing where Artemisia is, she constantly thinks of her. And how she thinks of her is that she recalls the girl's writing. And the girl has written a wonderful book called The Oracle, and it's pretty much her poetry and her exposition of her inner world. And so that is recalled by Diana and juxtaposed with the amazing freedom of the women there. There's a beautiful scene where Diana is being painted up in a cave, and she thinks back to the oracle when the girl recalls the story of when she first had her meeting with what she calls Anna, which is in a mirror when she's 8 years old, and she tries on a bikini, and for the first time in her life she realizes in the bikini that her body doesn't look like the images in a magazine of women in a bikini. And so she has her first terror, and the shop assistant says to her, oh, don't worry about that fat. You can get rid of that. And so that's the beginning of her journey. And Diana reflects on that while she's having a completely body image free experience with the Aboriginal women. So the two worlds are braided together. They sit like railway tracks beside each other throughout the whole first part of the book, where Diana's in the desert, the girl, we don't know where she is, but what she's left behind is her oracle.
And then there's Auntie Millie.
Yes, Auntie Millie is the extraordinary elder whom I really did meet. That wasn't her real name, and who has now passed. And she was the most powerful woman I have ever met. And I have a scene in there where she challenges Diana, her whole belief system, where she just has so much spiritual power, and Diana fights her so much throughout her journey with her, and finally Diana succumbs. And that moment changes Diana's life. So in part two, when she's back in her normal world with her husband and her father and the things she's left behind, everything that she's learned in the desert begins to operate through her unconsciously. And so she has an experience that she doesn't understand, but it moves through her in the second part of the book and basically changes her life decisions with a great outcome, I might add.
Well, good. It has a good ending, a happy ending, would you say?
It's a wonderful ending because it really shows women how to integrate what the teachings are of the first half of the book. And that's what makes it a wonderful ending. Most people who read it say, oh, we wanted more, but they need the time to integrate what the experience of the book brings them, because the reader goes on this journey and she is taken into an image-free zone and then she's thrown back into the image world.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a very beautiful internal journey for the reader.
Well, as you put it, a woman cannot be at home anywhere in the world until she feels at home in her own self.
Exactly. And that starts with feeling at home in her body. And the trouble is with children today, they are being taken out of their innocence. And in their own bodies, they don't even have a self-image. Their body is just something that they run around in. And then now we have this, because of this manufacturing, because of this marketing and this targeting of children, and women, of course, the child loses its innocence too quickly. By 8 years of age, it's already looking at its own image in the mirror, its body image, and saying, am I okay in this body? And this is really a new thing. And there were times before, even probably in the 50s, where children would have been free of this. Not women, but children. And so this kind of mirror problem, this looking out towards magazines for image consolidation or reflection, is a dangerous thing. And what girls should be looking at is their mothers and aunties and friends and see that they're happy in their bodies and with their image, and that would make the children mm-hmm. less anxious. But yes. what they're seeing is women who are absolutely hating their bodies, who are spending time at the gym trying to change them and plastic surgery and dieting and, you know, and the conversations the children are hearing between women are really not at all nourishing, and in fact they're very anxiety provoking.
And always the new wardrobe to make themselves, as they think, look better.
The constant self-improvement.
Right.
You can never be good enough. You will never be good enough. Mm-hmm. Now you've toned this. What about that? Now mm-hmm. you've bee stung your lips. What about this? And it's a constant thing because it's an industry. And it's an industry that thrives on women's anxiety about themselves.
Tens of billions of dollars, probably hundreds of billions of dollars, the industry, yes. So
absolutely.
You get right down to the nitty-gritty, right down to the valuable role of mother, the value of grandmothers, and the value of aunts, how important it is to be an aunt.
Oh, look, that is the thing, the beautiful thing that puts a smile on my face because I was just recently out in the desert. I've only been back for a couple of days, and I met some of the women that I had left there before the book. And those women, those aunties, they just embrace you. They just smile. They just welcome you. And that's what the value of an auntie is. You know, children love their aunties. Sometimes they have more fun with them than with their mums because their mums are busy. But aunties are people who are more available. And I would like to encourage women, whether you have children or not, to really step up to the role of auntie because it's really powerful. And we know the value of the mother, but the thing is that mothers are doing their job often in isolation. They're not really supported. You know, we don't see them, you know, getting all the rah-rah that goes with a political election or a stock exchange rise or anything. Women are often in nuclear families. They're living alone in their own house with their family. They're not connecting in a tribal way. That has been lost even since the 50s. Women before were, even post-war women, were more likely to have time to be with each other and to talk about the difficulties of bringing up their kids. But now, economic pressure is forcing both mums and dads to be at work, and so women are doing this job in isolation. So that's where aunties are important, and of course grandmothers are amazingly important. Grandmothers really need to be invited back into the fold and to be honored for the amazing role they can have because their lives have slowed down. They're no longer working. They're not rushing to rear their children. They have time. So to match them up with children, their own children or even others, you know, when you're with the tribal women, they're not so possessive about their own children. Anyone is an auntie to anyone. It's so beautiful. And a grandmother is a grandmother to maybe 40 kids. And that's lovely because when you're a mum, to know that people are looking after your children reduces your anxiety. So it's a wonderful thing. And I believe we can do it in our modern culture. I believe we just have to make a start. And that's what my plan is. My plan is to start a movement amongst women in cyberspace will do, where they can communicate with each other and share and have a kind of auntie network where we can all be aunties to whoever's children and to each other.
Well, it takes a village, as you point out, to raise a child. So what you're doing fits the basic principle, doesn't it? It fits
exactly right.
The basic principle. Well, fantastic, Denise. It sounds like you're certainly on a mission. And the auntie network. I love it.
Yes.
The auntie network.
It's great, isn't
it? Yeah. Well, there you go. There you go. We've been listening to Denise Greenaway. She is the author of her book, Finding Artemisia, A Journey into Ancient Women's Business. Well, Denise, tell us how to get your book.
Well, you can get it online from Amazon and I find a UK book depository also a fantastic service because it's got free delivery. But I think in the States you get free delivery anyway. So Amazon, and it's being published by Balboa Press, so you can certainly get it from there. And Balboa has made it available in any bookstore in the States, so you can ask for it in America and Canada. And you can come to my website and find out a lot more about me and my project. And it's a simple name to remember. It's simply findingartemisia.com. And you'll get to see some wonderful photographs of my time with the Aboriginal women being painted up and welcomed to country. And there's lots of information being uploaded. And there's also a Facebook page called Finding Artemisia. So please join me and join our Auntie Network.
Well, thank you for being with us on Indie Book Publishing, Denise.
Thank you so much, Steve. I really enjoyed it.
And this interview has been brought to everyone by Balboa Press.
You've been listening to Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen. Join us again next week at noon Eastern as Steve interviews another great author.